me. It's just Alexa. It's just Alexa. Because we're social distancing. And if I breathe on Harlow, I'll get a bunch of kids sick. Except I don't have coronavirus, but you don't know if you're a carrier or not. Don't forget Typhoid Mary, okay? So it's just me this week, as you could tell by my beautiful intro song, which we might just cut and just use as our intro this episode. We're having a weird one today, guys. Coronavirus got me feeling weird. Harlow works at an elementary school and cannot come through, and I need them to stay far away from me because I don't want to kill children. But we're gonna do, this is the Corn Podcast, and we usually are a true crime, paranormal, weird stuff, neat stuff, crazy stuff, but all fact podcast. Today, we are not. I'm gonna read you guys my favorite creepypasta because I need to take a true crime break, so I'm gonna read the scariest creepypasta that I hate the most in my dark closet. So, I would like to, you know, send Harlow a great, great shout out for being a fabulous co-host and really, really understanding my mental breakdown I had and letting me do this because I thought this was fun. So, all right, I'm going to put on my theater voice and I'm going to read this to you in a way that I've never read to you before. Russian researchers in the late 1940s kept five people awake for 15 days using an experimental gas-based stimulant. They were kept in a sealed environment to carefully monitor their oxygen intake so the gas didn't kill them, since it was toxic in high concentrations. This was before closed-circuit cameras, so they only had microphones and 5-inch thick glass, porthole-sized windows into the chamber to monitor them. The chamber was stocked with books, cots to sleep on but no bedding, running water and a toilet, and enough dried food to last all five over a month. The test subjects were political prisoners deemed enemies of the state during World War II. Everything was fine for the first 5 days. The subjects hardly complained, and having been promised, falsely, that they would be freed if they had submitted to the test and did not sleep for 30 days. Their conversations and activities were monitored, and it was noted that they continued to talk about increasingly traumatic events in their past, and the general tone of their conversations took on a darker aspect after the 4-day mark. After 5 days, they started to complain about the circumstances and events that led them to where they were, and started to demonstrate severe paranoia. They stopped talking to each other and began alternately whispering into the microphone in one-way mirrored portholes. Oddly, they seemed to think that they could win the trust of the experimenters by turning over the other subjects in captivity with them. At first, the researchers suspected this was an effect of the gas itself. But after 9 days, the first of them started screaming. He ran through the length of the chamber, repeatedly yelling at the top of his lungs for 3 hours straight. He continued attempting to scream, but it was only able to produce the occasional squeaks. The researchers postulated that he had physically torn his vocal cords. The most surprising thing about this behavior is how the other captives reacted to it, or rather, didn't react to it. They continued whispering into the microphones until the second of captives started to scream. The two non-screaming captives took the books apart, smeared page after page with their own feces, and pasted them calmly over the glass portholes. The screaming promptly stopped. So did the whispering in the microphones. After 3 days passed, the researchers checked the microphones hourly to make sure that they were working, since they thought it impossible that no sound could be coming with five people inside. The oxygen consumption in the chamber indicated that all five must still be alive. In fact, it was the amount of oxygen five people would consume at a very heavy level of strenuous exercise. On the morning of the 14th day, the researchers did something they said they would not do to get a reaction from the captives. They used an intercom inside the chamber, hoping to provoke any response from the captives because they were afraid that they were dead. They announced,
"We are opening the chamber to test the microphones. Step away from the door and lie flat on the floor or you will be shot. Compliance will earn one of your immediate freedom."
To their surprise, they heard a single phrase and a calm voice respond,
"You no longer want to be freed."
Debate broke out among the researchers and military forces funding the research. Unable to provoke any more response during the intercom, it was finally decided to open the chamber at midnight on the 15th day. The chamber was flushed with stimulant gas and filled with fresh air, and immediately the voices from the microphone began to object, Three different voices began begging, as if pleading for the life of loved ones to turn the gas back on. The chamber was opened up and the soldiers sent in to receive the test subjects. They began to scream, louder than ever, and so did the soldiers when they saw what was inside. Four of the five subjects were still alive, although no one could rightly call the state that any of them were in life. The food rations past day five had not been as so much touched. There were chunks of meat from the dead test subjects' thighs and chest shoved into the drain into the center of the chamber, blocking the drain and allowing 4 inches of water to accumulate on the floor. Precisely how much of the water on the floor was actually blood was never determined. All four of the surviving test subjects had also had large portions of muscle and skin torn away from their bodies. The destruction of flesh and exposed bone on their fingertips indicated that the wounds were inflicted by hand, not with teeth, as the researchers initially thought. Closer examination of the position and angles of the wounds indicated that most, if not all, were self-inflicted. The abdominal organs below the ribcage of all four test subjects had been removed. While the heart, lungs, and diaphragm remained in place, the skin and most of the muscles attached to the ribs had been ripped off, exposing the lungs through the ribcage. All the blood vessels and organs remained intact. They just had been taken out and laid on the floor, fanning out and eviscerated, but still living bodies of the subjects. The digestive tract of all four could be seen working, digesting food. It quickly became apparent that they were digesting their own flesh that they had ripped off and eaten over the course of days. Most of the soldiers were Russian special operatives at the facility, but many of them refused to return to the chamber and to remove the test subjects. They continued to scream to be left into the chamber and alternately begged and demanded that the gas be turned back on, lest they fell asleep. To everyone's surprise, the test subjects put up a fierce fight in the process of being removed from the chamber. One of the Russian soldiers died from having his throat ripped out. Another was gravely injured by having his testicles ripped off and an artery in his leg severed by one of the subjects' teeth. Another 5 of the soldiers lost their lives, if you count the ones that committed suicide in the weeks following the incident. In the struggle, one of the 4 living subjects had his spleen ruptured and bled out almost immediately. The medical research attempted to sedate him, but it proved impossible. He was injected with more than 10 times the human dose of morphine and still fought like a cornered animal, breaking the ribs and arm of one doctor. When the heart was seen to beat for a full 2 minutes, he had bled out to the point where there was no more air in the vascular system than blood. After it stopped, he continued to scream and flail for another 3 minutes, struggling to attack anyone in reach and just repeating the word, "More!" over and over, weaker and weaker, until he finally fell silent. The surviving test subjects were heavily restrained and moved into medical facility. The 2 with intact vocal cords continuously begged for the gas, demanding to be kept awake. The most injured of the 3 was taken to the only surgical operating room that the facility had. In the process of preparing the subject to have his organs placed back within his body, it was found that he was effectively immune to the sedative that had been given him to prepare the surgery. He fought fiercely against his restraints when the anesthetic gas was brought out to put him under. He managed to tear most of his way through the 4-inch wide leather strap on one wrist, even though the weight of a 200-pound soldier was holding his wrist as well. It took only a little more anesthetic than normal to put him under, and the instant his eyelids fluttering closed, his heart stopped. In the autopsy of the test subject that died on the operating table, it was found that his blood had been tripled the normal level of oxygen. His muscles were still attached to his skeleton, were badly torn, and he had broken 9 bones in the struggle to not be subdued. Most of them were from the force his own muscles had exerted on them. The second survivor had been the first group of 5 to start screaming. His vocal cords destroyed, he was unable to beg or object to surgery. He only reacted by shaking his head violently in disapproval when the anesthetic gas was brought near him. He shook his head yes when someone suggested, reluctantly, that they tried the surgery without anesthetic, and did not react for the entire 6-hour procedure, replacing his abdominal organs and attempting to cover them with what remained of his skin. The surgeon presiding stated repeatedly that it should be medically impossible for the patient to be alive. One terrified nurse assisting the surgery stated that she had seen patient's mouth curl into a smile several times whenever his eyes met hers. When the surgery ended, The subject looked at the surgeon and began to wheeze loudly, attempting to talk while struggling. Assuming this must be something of drastic importance, the surgeon had a pen and pad fetched so the patient could write his message. It was simple. Keep cutting. The other two test subjects were given the same surgery, both without anesthetic as well, although they had been injected with a paralytic for the duration of the operation. The surgeon found it impossible to perform the operation while the patients laughed continuously. Once paralyzed, the subjects could only follow the attending researchers with their eyes. The paralytic cleared their system in an abnormally short period of time, and they are soon trying to escape their bonds. The moment they could speak again, they were asking for the stimulant gas. The researchers tried asking why they had injured themselves, why they had ripped out their own guts, and why they wanted to be given gas again. Only one response was given. I must remain awake. All three of the subject restraints were reinforced and they are placed back in the chamber awaiting determination as to what should be done with them. The researchers, facing the wrath of their military benefactors for having failed the stated goals of their project, considered euthanizing the surviving subjects. The commanding officer, an ex-KGB, instead saw potential and wanted to see what would happen if they put back on the gas. The researchers strongly objected, but they were overruled. In preparation for being sealed into the chamber again, the subjects were connected to an EEG monitor and had their restraints padded for long-term confinement. To everyone's surprise, all three stopped struggling the moment it was let slip that they were going to back on the gas. It was obvious at this point that all three were putting up a great struggle to stay awake. One of the subjects that could speak was humming loudly and continuously. The mute subject was straining his legs against the leather bonds with all his might, first left, then right, then left again, for something to focus on. The remaining subject was holding his head off the pillow and blinking rapidly, having been the first to be wired for EEG, and most of the researchers were monitoring his brainwaves in surprise. They were normal most of the time, but sometimes flatlined inexplicably. It looked as if he were repeatedly suffering brain death, but he would return to normal. As they focused on the paper scrolling out of the brainwave monitor, only one nurse saw his eyes slip shut at the same moment his head hit the pillow. His brainwaves immediately changed to that of deep sleep, then flatlined for the last time as his heart simultaneously stopped. The only remaining subject that could speak started screaming to be sealed in now. His brainwaves showed the same flatlines as the one who had just died from falling asleep. The commander gave the order to seal the chamber with both subjects inside, as well as three researchers. One of the named three immediately drew his gun and shot the commander point blank between the eyes. They turned the gun on the mute subject and blew his brains out as well. He pointed his gun at the remaining subject, still restrained to a bed, as the remaining members of the medical and research team fled the room.
"I won't be locked in here with these things, not with you!"
he screamed at the man strapped to the table.
"What are you?"
he demanded.
"I must know!"
The subject smiled.
"Have you forgotten so easily?"
the subject asked.
"We are you. We are the madness that lurks within you all, begging to be free at every moment in your deepest animal mind. We are what you hide from in your beds every night. We are what you sedate into silence and paralysis when you go to the nocturnal heaven where we cannot tread."
The researcher paused, then aimed at the subject's heart and fired. The EEG flatlined as the subject weakly choked out.
"So nearly free."
Ta-da! And that was by original author unknown and dramatically read by your girl Alexa. And just to lighten things up a little bit, that was my favorite scary story. Now I'm going to tell you my favorite scary story. This is by Alvin Schwartz from a book that we all grew up reading. And I'm not going to tell you the name of it because you'll find it out very quickly. A boy was digging at the edge of the garden when he saw a big toe. He tried to pick it up, but it was stuck to something. So he gave it a good, hard jerk and it came off in his hand. Then he heard something groan and scamper away. The boy took the toe into the kitchen and showed it to his mother. "It looks nice and plump," she said. "I'll put it in the soup and we'll have it for supper." That night, his father carved the toe into 3 pieces. And they each had a piece. Then they did the dishes, and when it got dark, they went to bed. The boy fell asleep almost at once, but in the middle of the night, a sound awakened him. It was something out in the street. It was a voice, and it was calling to him.
"Where is my toe?"
it groaned. When the boy heard that, he got very scared, but he thought, "It doesn't know where I am. It can't find me." And then he heard the voice once more, only now it was closer.
"Where is my toe?"
it groaned. The boy pulled the blankets over his head and closed his eyes. "I'll go to sleep. When I wake up, it'll be gone." But soon he heard the back door open, and again he heard the voice.
"Where is my toe?"
it groaned. The boy heard footsteps move through the kitchen and into the dining room, into the living room, and into the front hall. And then slowly they climbed the stairs. Closer and closer they came. And soon, they were in the upstairs hall. Now, they were outside his door.
"Where is my toe?"
the voice groaned. His door opened. And shaking with fear, he listened as the footsteps slowly moved through the dark toward his bed. And then they stopped.
"Where is my toe?"
"You've got it!"
Thank you. Thank you. It's a lot scarier whenever you're 8 years old, but that was The Big Toe by Alvin Schwartz in the Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark series. I hope you guys enjoyed listening to 30 minutes of my favorite spooky stories with cuts. I don't think it'll be that long, but I just did want to thank you guys for letting me tell you guys a couple of scary stories, and really commend Harlow on being such a wonderful and understanding co-host, and thank you guys for being such awesome listeners, and I think Todd, Harlow's friend, corrected me because I speak out of turn without knowing things and I just hate everything. But the role of Tracy Turnblad's dad was written to be in drag because it was originally written for Divine. And I did not know that. Divine is a drag queen. And I was corrected. And I didn't cry, but I almost did because I hate being wrong. But now I know and I'm educated, and if I make mistakes like that, please gently tell Harlow, who can then even more gently tell me, because my feelings are always hurt. Next week, I think we'll be alone again. We don't know how long this social distancing is going to last, and I will bring you guys a story about the siege at Waco. Thank you for listening to this dramatic reading. I had a lot of fun doing it. I hope that you guys enjoyed listening to it. And I hope you liked The Big Hairy Toe better than the Russian sleep experiment. I kind of had to do that because I got scared in my closet. All right, guys, have a wonderful Thursday. Tell Harlow they're great because they did a lot of the editing in this. And stay happy, stay beautiful, stay humble. Wash your fucking hands. I was going to close it with that. But follow us on our Instagram called The Corn Pod. That's TheCornPod. And we do have a website, and that is also thecornpod.com. That's TheCornPod. We have a submission form. And guys, I am on my hands and knees begging and pleading for you to please send in your scary stories. Harlow and I have a really great idea for those. I'm really sorry I keep bumping my microphone. I talk with my hands a lot. But Harlow and I have a really great idea with those, and we really want to use them, and we really hope that you guys come through for us. Again, guys, follow us on our Instagram. That's The Corn Pod, TheCornPod. And our website, thecornpod.com, thecornpod.com. And we will be back next week. I will be back next week. Maybe we can Skype Harlow in. We'll see what we can do. But we love ya. Wash your hands. Stop buying toilet paper. Calm down. Take a shower. Take a bubble bath. Draw. And take care of yourself during the social distancing, guys. I know it gets really hard. Just really remember to take care of yourselves and remember that even though you really want to go out, it's not what it's time for. It's time to take care of others around us and really stay home and work on a really nice art project or read a bunch of books or maybe do your fucking research for your podcast. Alexa. All right, guys. I love you all. Harlow does too. And you have a wonderful Thursday. I'm getting paid this week. I hope you're getting paid this week. I love ya. Goodbye. Goodbye. Goodbye.